Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name's Scott Coyne, and I'll be your host for this episode. Our Ben's not with us this week. Our Ben's away on a very exciting little research trip to the FIFA Museum in Zurich for research for his new book. And from what I can gather, he's having a very good time there. So he'll be back with us next week, and he might tell us a little bit more about that. But our Joris is here, and I think he's still basking in the joy of a really good result for your team this weekend, Joris, wasn't it?
Yeah, like I said last week, well, there's weeks where it's more fun to do the pod, and there's week where it's less fun. Last week it was obvious that it was a bit less fun for me, but this time I can't complain. So finally, that has been a while, and it was a much needed feeling as well again. So I hope to get used to it again soon.
Yeah, we'll get to dissecting that one in a little while, but why don't we start with a score roundup as usual. So the weekend kicked off with the spicy Walloon derby, which seems like it's become more spicy in recent years. Standard winning that one 3-1 in Liège. Eupen were battered 5-1 at home by Zulte Waregem, and we're certainly going to have plenty to say in that one. Cercle Brugge kept their playoff two hopes alive with a pretty convincing 3-1 home win over St. Truiden. Oostende's relegation was confirmed after they lost 4-0 at home to Leuven. Club Brugge and Westerlo played out a 0-0 draw, quite an entertaining 0-0 draw actually. Genk won 5-2 over Anderlecht, which Joris is going to enjoy talking about in a little while. Plenty to say about that one as well. Mechelen drew 1-1 with Ghent. Antwerp kept up the pressure on Joris' side, the Genkies, with a 1-0 win over Kortrijk, as did Union Saint-Gilloise in Brussels. They beat Serang, who are already relegated as well, 2-1. So, Joris, let's start with the spicy Walloon derby. And before we get to the game, we need to talk about rats. Do you like rats?
Who does?
Well, this is, some of you might have missed this story this week, but there was a rather bizarre story around the derby where it turned out that some of the Charleroi ultras decided in their wisdom, do you know what? We hate Standard Liège. We think it's a good idea to get hold of some dead rats, paint them red, and to chuck them at Standard fans at some point during the game. And I just thought this was just wild. I only saw this afterwards, Joris, but I mean, what the actual fuck?
Yeah, well, not very loud in the podcast, I guess, but yeah, indeed, that's an exception we have to make because, well, how do you come up with that? That's my first question. Maybe not the best first question to have, but outside of like the initial bewilderment, I guess, like, why, how, what's the idea, how do you come up with it, why, again, why, just also, like, if not that it would be better, but, like, it was also thrown in, like, family-friendly stance, it would not be better if it would have been at the Ultras or something, but, now it's even more bizarre, like, additionally, but not that it would have been different otherwise, I guess, but just, how do you come up with it, how do you discuss that? How do you get these rats? How you paint them is probably the easiest question, but how do you get them in the stadium?
I mean, this whole fixture is, you know, as I was kind of alluding to a little bit earlier, has taken on a bit of added spice recently. It feels like that to me anyway, and it seems to be reaching, you know, new heights of rivalry. You know, there's been some trouble in the fixture recently as well in recent times, and this is a totally new spin on how to tell your rivals how much you hate them. But yeah, I mean, I think this one's a little bit problematic for a number of reasons, and it'll be interesting to see if anything comes of that particular incident as well. You know, I was hearing some stories that the Liège police are considering potentially banning Charleroi fans from attending the next away fixture at Slessen, so we'll need to see what happens there. Standard Liège remaining very quiet on it at the moment, so I don't think we've heard of the last of this. But moving on to the game itself, away from that horrible bizarreness. What do you think, Joris? Because Charleroi didn't play badly. They just didn't take their chances, did they?
Yeah, exactly. I guess they even deserved something out of this game, all things considered. But it's like we always say, our favorite word, efficiency was not there. They didn't take their chances. From their side, a bitter result, I guess, not only because it's a derby, but because, of course, if they would have won, they would have been qualified for the Euro playoffs. Now they still will have to play for it in next weekend. Standard did take their moments. It's not that Standard were really bad or anything, but they didn't create that much anyway. Like the Charleroi were a bit more up to the game, it seemed. The main takeaways from Standard side, I guess, are like, well, the fun part maybe as well in a way. So, Emo scoring a goal after having finally scoring a goal after so long. I think it's his second goal, and his first one was in August, if the commentators were correct. And yep. Yeah, so he got a lot of relief, but he already had a second yellow card, and then he's just funny, but also utterly stupid, so to say, to pull your shirt off, because that's the clearest yellow card you get, and referees, they have to give them, I guess, as well. So, like, yeah, you can't escape that one, and it's so obvious, and it's one of the stupidest red cards you can get, and we've seen some players do that, and Emo is the latest one in that line now as well to join that. And well, of course, because of the winning this game, Standard actually, and because of other results going their way as well, Standard still remain until at least theoretically in the race for Champions playoffs as well still. So that's something to be really excited about for their fans. I don't think too many things need to happen for it to need to fall their way next weekend to really make it happen, I think. But well, as long as there is a chance, they will go fight for it. And well, with a manager like Dela, I'm sure they will definitely really give it a good go to at least get their result their way. And then you can only see what the rest does, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty extraordinary to think that, you know, a couple of months ago, I think, you know, when we were talking about Standard, it looked like there was a very real possibility they were going to push quite hard for playoff one, and then they seemed to kind of fall off the pace a little bit. And right at the tail end of the season now, they've got themselves in with, you know, a chance, albeit a slim chance, like you say. I think it's reliant on a number of things kind of going their way. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens this coming weekend. Like you, I think it's pretty unlikely, but I suppose stranger things have happened. Likewise, you know, Charleroi obviously fighting hard for a playoff two spot going into the final weekend as well. So both these sides have got a lot to play for in the final regular round of fixtures. Speaking of having a lot to play for, let's move on to Eupen's game against Zulte Waregem at the Keurig. I don't think any of us saw this result coming. I think that would be fair to say. And from a Zulte perspective, the great escape appears to be on.
It still is. And yeah, well, only one side could deliver the five goals again, like in the 5-5 draw from last time. And from a Zulte point, it's really good and really encouraging, and hoping for them that it's not too little too late. It is very much possible still that it might be, because their chances would have grown a lot more even if Cercle Brugge would not have won and would be out. Well, not only that, but would be already out of the race for the Europe playoffs. But since they're also still in it, they really need to get a win, that they will definitely, well, not hand them any favors in the West Flemish region. They won't be there, I think. There's less chance for that now. And that for Zulte, that's it's a really good result, really good game, really encouraging. Of course, this will give them the confidence at least to go into that game and still be in a fight, which will otherwise already not have been. Gano hat-trick, former hat-trick of assists, and also his first goal for the club as well. Also in the fifth goal, he was also involved, because that was also coming from one of his free kicks, but then was only in second instance, was headed on and then put in the net by Fila. I think that was the first one. Well, it's really encouraging for the result of Waregem. For Eupe, on the other hand, that's a very sad 100 game for Peters, for them. For obviously, And yeah, well, imagine winning twice in a whole round of games of the whole league and then having to play and need to win to be safe against the Club Brugge in Jan Breidel. That's also still very much in a fight for some in a lifeline for European playoffs, for Champions playoffs even, sorry. That's not a good foresight, and they most likely will also really have to rely on this results between Cercle and Zulte Waregem. And well, one other thing that I want to highlight has nothing to do with either side, but the VAR, I know I criticize a lot of VAR and referee decisions all the time, but they did really well in this game, actually. They came in and validated a few goals from Zulte Waregem specifically that were originally called off offside. For example, two of Gano's goals came from there, and there were some other phases where the VAR intervened well and worked well. And finally, a good example. But when we highlight the bad, we also need to highlight the positives of the system sometimes, I suppose, to keep the balance a bit.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it feels like, you know, we do a lot of, there's a lot of criticism of referees, shall we say, sometimes, you know, rightly so, but credit where credit's due. And you're right, actually. I think some of those decisions were really very tight as well. So, you know, you would hope they would be checked, and I think they made the right call. Incredible to think that Zulte went in 4-0 up at half-time. Just extraordinary. Eupen looked really nervous to me, Joris. It looked like they were, you know, really, not so much bottling it, but struggling with the importance of this game and not quite doing their job, switching off. The first three goals in particular are almost identical, and effectively it's the same mistake as well, you know, as you were pointing out while we were watching it, which is pretty unbelievable. Zulte, we know, are reasonably strong on stationary phases of play. You know, when you've got somebody like Ruud Vormer, who had a very good game, as you were highlighting, he's quite good at putting balls into the box, did that on a number of occasions here, which, you know, got really strong results for Zulte. It's just really strange that Eupen would allow effectively the same mistake to be a sucker punch so many times in a game which was over by half time. Although there was that moment early in the second half where they pulled one back, you know, within, I think it was about a minute of the restart, and I remember saying to both you guys when we were watching it, if anybody can muck this up yet, it's Zulte Waregem, you know, judging by the way their defence has been over the last few years. But they held out, convincing 5-1 win. Eupen only, as you were saying, only 2 wins in 17 now, which is a really poor run of form. And going into the final round of fixtures, there's a lot to play for a lot of sides. Eupen, as you were saying, they go to the Jan Breidel this weekend. So they're going to have to come out and have a go and try and win the game, which is going to create a really interesting game there. Zulte, on the other hand, they're at home to Cercle, knowing that a win and Eupen failing to win will see them stay up at Eupen's expense. Having said that, that will be no easy task, because Cercle go into that game knowing that they're still very much in with a chance of a playoff two spot. So they have a lot to fight for. And I can see quite a lot of goals potentially in both of those games.
Very much possible, very much possible. And well, yeah, that Eupen are still in pole position. That's the one advantage that they have, of course. Zulte Waregem really have to win. Eupen, yeah, okay, they also have to win to be completely certain, and whether they draw or lose doesn't matter, because they stay ahead of Zulte Waregem if Zulte Waregem doesn't win. But yeah, well, with Zulte Waregem's defense, with Cercle's attacking playing style as well, and also, yeah, that also sometimes costing them at the back. Yeah, and Zulte Waregem being quite good at the attack, they actually have scored more than Cercle Brugge, for example, to make it back to that game. One goal more for Zulte Waregem. So yeah, definitely possible. And Ueda is also on a firing form, as we will talk about in a little bit as well.
Yeah, Zulte, actually, just one final point on them. Zulte are going to have to do something they haven't done since October, and that's when back-to-back, if they're going to do this. So it'll be really interesting to see, because the mindset for both Zulte and Eupen going into this final game is going to have to be very different to how they've been approaching games for months, because it very much is a gung-ho approach, go out there and winner takes all, hopefully. So it's going to be really interesting. On that particular point, we've actually got a listener question from David Parks, who asks us, Joris, who do we think is actually going to go down? Is it going to be Eupen, or are Zulte going to sink? What do you reckon? I mean, for me, at the moment, I think the momentum has swung slightly in Zulte's favour, but there's not much in it, really.
Yeah, I do think the momentum definitely has switched, but I do think that Eupen will stay in. I think they probably did just about enough in Zultewagen. Yeah, I don't trust them winning twice in a row indeed, and not conceding enough, conceding less than for two games in a row as well. It might have been a different story. I think I've alluded to that the past 2 weeks now as well a few times. If Zultewagen's opponents, in this case, we would not have anything to play for anymore. But yeah, given the competition format, they still do. And that might harm them. Yeah. That being said, I wouldn't bet on it, but I do think Eupen will have, based on the advantage that they still have going into this, I think they will be lucky enough to stay in.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's certainly going to be exciting. And those two games, Club Brugge against Eupen and Zulte Waregem against Cercle, are two to kind of keep an eye on this coming weekend. And we will probably have a number of screens going at the same time here at the BFB. It's going to be one of those weekends, I suspect. Let's move on to the Jan Breidel, shall we? Cercle Brugge picking up another 3 points, continuing their strong season, beating St. Truiden 3-1. And Cercle are still in with a chance of a playoff two spot, as we were saying, Joris. And we saw, amongst other things, Ayazi Uida continuing to have a great season, getting his 16th and 17th goals of the season. And I suppose one of the questions, and this is more of a, I suppose, existential question unrelated to the game, and it's around whether he will still be there next season. We did, interestingly, we saw the return of Kevin Denke this weekend, who also got on the score sheet. It's been interesting to see Gaboho start up front with Oida recently, trying something different, and I just wonder if that's a wee hint as to the fact that Kevin Denke, whose future may potentially lie elsewhere over the summer as well. A number of big questions yet to be answered in a Cercle Brugge fashion over the summer. But I suppose that's what happens when you have such a good domestic season. You pick up a lot of interest in your players and a lot of change there. But they're right in it, because last week we were talking about how it looked like it might have got away from them.
I don't know if the Dinky part is also transfer related. It might, of course, but of course he had a few matches of suspension, and I guess they did well enough to the replacement will play a bit more, since they did quite well during the suspension, and to give him the favor in this case. Yeah, the question if Ueda will stay, it doesn't look very likely, especially if the sporting director and the manager already start talking about the money that might come in. That suggests that they're probably not going to be able to hold on to him. Ueda is also twice scoring again and giving an assist against his national team teammates as well, of course. So that's always funny. I think I've also mentioned something like that in the first leg of this fixture. And a nice tifo for the Cercle Brugge player of the. Was it player of the century or player of all time, Jules Verriest? That's also worth a mention. Also, I have to correct myself. That's coming to the other side, to Sint-Truiden. Last week, I gave the wrong stats. Bruno has scored again, and now apparently has equaled their goal scoring record. So he still needs one goal to get to the solely on the top of that list. But yeah, this result means for Sint-Truiden that there's really nothing to play for anymore. They're definitely mid-table outside of any kind of playoffs and outside of relegation danger, which is also a reason why their fixture has moved. That's maybe a small talking point for the next weekend as well. They moved a few fixtures, just a few. 7 out of the 9 still play at the same time, but a few have moved, which one of them is the Sint-Truiden one, and the fans are not happy about that late announcement of that. And I can get that. That's maybe something we can quickly take in this as well now, in the midst of things. But yeah, football and money. TV rules the football rules once again.
Yes, it feels like a tale as old as time that, you know, the warning that the Pro League really are continually told by fans, look, you know, give us some leeway, you know, and it's not entirely down to the Pro League, of course, and the calendar manager. There are a range of other considerations, but yeah, it's always frustrating when fans are trying to plan ahead as far as possible and, you know, late changes, which of course reminds me, that happened to me recently. You know, regular listeners will know that I was over in Mechelen for a few days quite recently and was hoping to get to Mechelen's home game against Club Brugge that weekend, and quite late on the calendar manager switched the fixtures, which meant that the game was actually being played at the same time as I was flying out of the country, which was a bit disappointing to me. But you know, these things happen, unfortunately. Let's move on to the game on the coast at the Diaz Arena, shall we, Joris? The game which confirmed Oostend's relegation. The good ship Oostend has finally sunk, unfortunately, after a 10-year stay in the top flight. They've gone back down to the Challenger Pro League. I think it'd be fair to say, you know, that they've had a very long, difficult season. Things haven't really been going right on the pitch. We know that. A lot of issues there, and they certainly haven't gone right off the pitch either. Quite a lot to talk about here, really, if you think about it. I mean, I was looking at some of the numbers as far as the actual football's concerned. We know in the early part of the season, Ivan de Raiga was still in post there as T1, and he only managed to pick up 14 out of 45 points this season. They then made a change and went with Dominic Talhammer, which we all felt at the time. I remember us discussing this when this happened. We felt that that was actually quite a good choice and it made sense, and perhaps they stood a chance with that appointment. Hasn't worked out that way. Dominic Talhammer managed to pick up 10 out of 54, which I don't think is a reflection on him, if I'm honest. He's taken quite a lot of flack in the last few weeks, which I can understand as the anger and frustration of the Oostend fans has kind of risen. I think the confidence has ebbed away from this side. Interesting to hear Dominic talking about that this week, coming out very publicly and apologising to all of the employees inside the club and the fans, and to analyse a little bit about kind of what went wrong this season without naming any names, which I think is, you know, very dignified of him and probably the right thing to do at this stage. It was interesting to hear him highlight the fact that he doesn't think that the style of play or his system is behind this, and I think he's right about that as well. I think the question of whether they have the right players to play that system, that's maybe a separate question, and whether there are players of a sufficient quality there. But we've spoke about the recruitment a lot and that not working and that not being right for them. They've conceded 75 goals this season and only scored 35. So that very simple stat in itself tells its own story. But unfortunately, they've gone now. And one of the things I took out of this week, Joris, was it was actually quite nice to see fans of other clubs, both in Belgium and in other countries, expressing a sense of solidarity with the Oostend fans. I think a lot of people have a degree of warmth for Oostend, which was quite nice to see, really.
Yeah, definitely. But unfortunately, that's not going to be enough for Oostend. Yeah. Just a terrible season from the start. Shout out to their DJ again, though. Like, I think he also he's always up to something there. He has a good sense of humor, and taking it with humor as well. Both at halftime and at the end of the game, he played some songs fitting the situation. I'd say it's like that, befitting of the situation.
I think that's what they call subliminal messages, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. He also does it in better times for them. But yeah, another shout out for him. And yeah, the image of the mascots falling down and the players also, as sad as they are, the images of this weekend. But yeah, if you just take it to the last two games only, then when they were still in a shout of getting safe, yeah, 9 goals conceded in these three final games. I guess that says it all. Especially in this game, but I think even Talhammer and also other players after the game, Talhammer maybe even before the game, seeing at the result that was folding out at in Eupen, where they still had it, where which meant they still had a chance, yeah, to get out of the relegation. Then yeah, they didn't manage, obviously, and that's a very disappointing way to end their season as well. Okay, it's not to be certain of this relegation. It doesn't give the feeling that they actually fought for it. Of course they did, but yeah, the things were just not good enough. I guess that's the story of their season a bit. And interesting to see what will come now. Who will be taking over, and what they will implement in this, what our plans are with the club. Yeah. And what their focus will be mainly, I guess, as well. Because if Oostende will be that focus, unlike it seems to have been this time around. Yeah, and Leuven, not that much to say. Decent win for them. And it is interesting that they are actually still within a shout of playoffs now, of the Euro playoffs. It's a lot of results, much like even more, I think, than with Standard. A lot of results need to go their way to get there. But at least there is a mathematical, theoretical chance that it's possible. So still, I guess that's actually, they're ending their season on a good note. It seems whether it will be a good enough note to actually reach the objective of these playoffs. That's not completely in their own hands, of course. But yeah, they might fall short by a closer margin than it looked a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think that's fair, definitely. Just on Oostende again, I just wonder, I mean, my feeling about it is that I think a sale of the club to new owners is the big overhanging question, as we know, and I think this is where the answer to their future lies, who that's going to be and how quickly that's going to come. We know there's interest from Newcastle's owners. We know that there has been interest from the owners of Wolves, and Bournemouth's owner Bill Foley also expressed an interest as well, though I don't think that has gone any further. So on one hand, there is some positive news. There is some interest in a sale for the club. On the other hand, it's a bit worrying because looking at it from the outside, it doesn't necessarily look like the ideal new owners are there. And I certainly have a feeling, my view in this is that I don't think the club can move in the direction that they want to and build again for the future in a positive way until they find owners that are right for them. So we'll see what happens over the summer, because I think there's a lot of work to be done there and a lot of uncertainty overhanging the club still, which we'll come back to. Let's move on, shall we, to the 0-0 draw, the entertaining 0-0 draw. I quite enjoyed this game actually because it was quite intense at Ed Coupier between Westerlo and Club Bruges. Interestingly, I think, you know, best performance in a while, Joris. I thought they looked kind of quite good, pretty intense, absolutely dominated the game for the most part. But there's an issue here that kind of is becoming a bit of a recurring theme for them, and they're just lacking a cutting edge at the moment. They're not taking their chances, and they're definitely underperforming their XG. What I did like was, it was nice to see Skov Olsen back, obviously. Skov Olsen on one wing, Lang on the other, and Jukla up front, because I think that that forward line, I think, is quite good and the right mix. But yeah, creating lots of chances and not taking them, Club Bruges, at the moment, which is leading them to dropping more points again.
Yes, and given other results, especially the result in Mechelen later that weekend, that could be the draw too much, and they could have leapfrogged Gent maybe otherwise. Of course, the dynamics of that game would have been different as well. Decent 0-0. Surprisingly, 2 0-0s for Westerlo in a row. That's something that didn't happen in all the games prior to that streak against Anderlecht and Club Brugge. I guess they will take that. They probably deserved a bit more in the game against Anderlecht. They didn't deserve more in this game. They will be happy because they are finally, even before the final game against secured the qualification for the Euro playoffs, something they would have signed for at the beginning of the season, I believe. We're hands down even. It's a good job for them, and too bad that they didn't really feature in this game too much. Club Brugge were all over them for large parts of this game. Yeah, 12 shots on target as well. So still lacking the goals. even if that's maybe the best front three as well. And okay, it's not fair to take Skovolsen in this equation given his injury-proneness in this season. But they're still lacking goals just in general. Like, Udglas started really well and he still scores once in a while, but not enough. And well, we all unfortunately know for him that Yaremchuk hasn't brought what they were expecting from him and needed from him in the end. Lang is playing well, but the efficiency part is again still a bit lacking. It has been better in recent seasons. Yeah, that's probably also the main reason why they're still in this position. And yeah, they will be really needing some results going their way again for they're still reaching the Champions playoffs, which is then unlike what Westerlo would have done, not what they would have signed for the rest of at the beginning of the season. It could be the first time they miss out on these playoffs, but okay, maybe we should not talk about that this weekend yet, but maybe next week when we have a clearer view and when things have happened or have not happened, we can actually talk about it. That's disappointing season so far for Club Brugge. Well, but encouraging signs. And I agree, this game was a really good one. Yeah, just lacking the scoring. Ironically, the Kuiper, their lone player, getting the ball off the line as well on one occasion, which could then again be that the goal that would have swung it qualification for the Champions playoffs in their favor again.
Yeah, it's been a very strange season for club on a number of levels. I thought it was interesting this week Bart Verheijga was talking about the fact that if they do fail to qualify for playoff one and they don't win playoff two, which would be their last route to guaranteeing European football, then it's going to have quite a significant impact on what their summer budget's going to be. And you would imagine it will probably affect potentially who the new T1 could be as well. So yeah, the next 6 or 7 weeks are going to have huge implications for their summer. And of course, by default, next season as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens there. Let's move on, shall we, and allow you to wax lyrical about a great result for your side, Genk 5, Anderlecht 2. A really good performance from your side, I thought. A couple of things to highlight, which I'm sure you're going to want to talk about. Obviously, Bilal Elkanous getting his first professional goal finally, which was a delight, I think, for everybody to see. That's certainly something he needs to start doing more of, but he enjoyed his moment. He had a good game. I thought the quality of finishing in this game was really good. Great finish for Slimani's goal, Dreyer's goal, Samata's goal as well. Some really wonderful finishing that most keepers wouldn't have stood a chance for. I really enjoyed the kind of quality nature of that finishing. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, Joris, have Genk now amassed more points this season than they did when they last won the title? Because if that's the case, that's an indication of not only how good they've been this season, but how hard Antwerp and Union have been pushing them.
Yes, it's the highest points haul they have gotten inside a regular league of 34 games. So ever including these title winning seasons as well. So yeah, that shows something. It's still less than they can only equal Union's total of last season, for example, though. But that also again highlights how good Union have been over the past 2 years, especially since Union, yeah, they still are still have a chance to get over Hink in this last game day as well, right at the verge of these playoffs. Which could be both psychologically and mathematically be crucial in the end as well. Not going to wax lyrical too long, but yes, the really encouraging performance, especially given, it was a Genk side. It was a slightly depleted with Hanna being suspended, Munio still out, Cuesta still out as well. All of the replacement actually did really well. I felt Sadiq would maybe have done a little bit better on Slimani's goal, but that was just, good finishing as well. And yeah, I think the mistakes were made earlier in that flow of the attack as well. Yeah, Anderlecht also played well, I have to admit. This was really an advertisement for football, I guess, this whole game. They played really well. Yeah, and talking about the quality of finishing, there's one you didn't even mention, and I understand, because it doesn't look like it's the most difficult one, and probably it isn't, but Aziz's, with his weaker foot on the rebound coming so quick, finishing like that is also, incredible. But and it's, of course, in an empty goal, though, so it's slightly easier, maybe, but anyways, that amazed me as well. And that was a much needed goal, and probably the goal that, talking about psychology, turned this game almost definitively in Genk's favor, in combination with them. Yeah, that was right at the brink of halftime, right after Slimani had equalized, which was a draw was at that point in the game probably a fair result as well. Taking the lead then, and then coming out of the dressing room, waltzing over the Anderlecht. Yeah, that was really well. Good to see that there's more than the only 11 players. Also good that for at least for 1 week there's no talk about Onomachu being missed and the efficiency has dropped. There's 5 goals in the back of the net. Even though probably there could have been more, but they created so much. It was glimpses, or maybe for large parts of the games, even more of the Genk we like to see. Definitely, I do like to see, and that we have seen in parts of the season, but not for a while. And maybe in this case as well, worth to mention, they took their moments. That has to do that with these five goals. They took their moments right with that goal right before the halftime, and also in the first 15 minutes of that second half, where they played maybe their best football of all season, almost maybe, or close to it, and confidence boost which was needed. And I hope it's I'll always have that in the back of my mind, although I'm totally enjoying it, but I hope it's not just a one-time rebound thing anymore. But I hope this is promising for not only the game in Charleroi, which will be a tough one to end the league, but also the playoffs itself. That there's confidence that they can still can really play well and really steamroll opponents at some points of the game. Just need to take those chances, which they this time did. And really happy with that result, obviously. And especially happy for what you mentioned, Alkanus's first goal. Finally, get some doubts out of his head maybe as well. If there were any, they didn't show really any signs of it. But I can imagine that inevitably it weighs on you a bit if everyone keeps talking about it. And now it's finally has happened. It was also Arteaga's 100th game. That's also one last thing to say about Genk. And Anderlecht, slightly worrying with the side on the Europe already for on Thursday. They had 6 clean sheets in a row, and now they concede 5 in one game. That's of course not the ideal way. Also, with a result that if it would repeat on Thursday, they still would be out of Europe. But again, of course, you go into that game with a different mindset as well, of course, and you don't have to. Well, you go into this game differently psychologically, of course, but it's a reminder for them that they should perform well, I guess, as well. One more thing on Anderlecht already, before we give it back to you. Dreyer and Slimani scoring again. Slimani had a good game. Dreyer, outside of his goal, actually didn't do much. He has been doing that a bit lately, unfortunately, for Anderlecht. But, nonetheless, the two main winter purchases have definitely paid off for them. I think Slimani also now has either passed or equaled Silva as a top goal scorer for them this season. And Dreyer has contributed as well, both in goals and assists.
Yeah, they did, you're right. It was interesting to hear Brian Reimer post-match, actually. He was talking about that 10-minute spell in the second half where the game was lost from their point of view and how disappointed he was with that. But I found it really interesting because he went on to talk about how he thinks that maybe he picked the wrong team for this game. You know, he made some changes, understandably, I think, obviously, because they had less than 3 days recovery after their great win against Alkmaar during the week, which forced, I think, some of those changes just to kind of keep things fresh with, obviously, the second game coming up in a few days in mind as well. Always a difficult juggling act for coaches. And it was just interesting on reflection to hear him post-match say that he felt that perhaps that was a factor in that 10-minute spell in the second half as well, where they didn't perform quite to the standards that they would expect, and effectively switched off a few times as well. But yeah, they've got a huge game coming up this weekend, which we'll touch on in a little while. Let's move on on to the Achter de Kazernsch away for Mechelen 1, Ghent 1. Can't not mention Dries Wouters, absolutely fantastic equaliser, rocket of a goal this one. If you haven't seen it, go and check it out. Interesting as well to see Tarik Dissadali getting a full 45 minutes. Obviously, Ein van Eisenbroek wanting to kind of ease his fitness levels up ahead of their own big game against West Ham this week as well. He's had sort of 10 or 15 minutes here or there the last couple of weeks, so they're obviously gently working him back to full fitness, and playing that 45 minutes tells me that he's certainly in Van Heisenbroek's frame of mind to feature on Thursday night at some point should he be needed, which there's a good chance he will be. Did it surprise you that Ghent dropped points here, Joris?
It really did. That's all credits to well, not all, but most of the credits go for Mechelen, who performed slightly better than and really showed up for a game this time. And with a slight tactical change from De Voer as well, maybe already with the side on this on the cup final as well, already with a bit more defensively, which, well, it could have not worked because Ghent still created a few big chances. That's why I'm saying most of the credits. There's a few sitters that Ghent didn't make, a Kuipers header of a rebound, and then especially another rebound from almost on the line, where Okumu and Orban were fighting for the ball, and in the end, I think it's Okumu shoots it against a Mechelen leg, so it doesn't go in a weird way. So yeah, but ultimately, Ghent were holding out for that draw, or were happy with that draw because they knew the result of Club Brugge, of course, and that they would still be in pole position for the Europe playoffs. I don't know, I do not know if that's the right approach for it, because also the whole top three has won again, so you can qualify for these playoffs, which is important for TV money, for example. But if you also want to play a role and still, well, play a role, you still can, but if you also want to move up still, maybe not for the title, that seems a bit unlikely with three teams so far ahead, but that to move and get a third or for a second spot, even, it's, yeah, that seems less and less likely, despite being now in favor or for the in a favorable position still for these playoffs, but to reach them, but they have to play against an already relegated Oostende and at home. Yeah, they really should get that result out of the way as well, and qualify now. But we've all seen Ghent, and we all know Ghent lately. Like, they generally do the most unexpected things.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a massive week for the Buffaloes, isn't it? Obviously, they've got that prize of a potentially major European semi-final if they can get past West Ham on Thursday evening, and they've got the final regular game of the league season where they're looking to secure their playoff one spot. So it's a really big week for them, and I think if they can come through both those challenges in the way that they want to, then it'll have been quite a week for them. There's no doubt about that. And fingers crossed, you know, they can certainly get a great result in Europe, because I think that's to everyone's benefit, isn't it? Let's move on to the two remaining games of the weekend. And these are both games featuring sides in Antwerp and Union, both playing at home. Antwerp winning 1-0 at the Bosel against Kortrijk, and Union Saint-Gilloise winning 2-1 at Park Duden against the already relegated Sarang. So Antwerp and Union managing to keep up the pressure on your side, Joris?
Yes, definitely. Antwerp had so many chances that it's a miracle that they had to rely and wait so long for a goal. I have to give credit to one specific Kortrijk player there, which is Van Abbe. I think not on one, not on two, but even on three occasions, he saved the ball from a trajectory that would have carried it over the line. So he was maybe, in a way, the best goalkeeper that was on the pitch as well. Yeah, just very inefficient Antwerp. They kept their 18th clean sheet. And yeah, just the one thing, again, it hasn't been talked about, and well, as the Antwerp also really deserved to win, it's difficult to say, but comparing the handball from Cirque de Brugge last weekend against Antwerp, and then Muya's handball right a few minutes before his goal, still at 0-0 as well, still inside the box. Well, if you would compare them straight away like this, I think you had to pick one that would have been given a penalty. I don't think you would have picked what how it has turned out in the end. But okay, that's what happens. These handballs, it's too tiresome to go into that. If we really quickly jump to the Union game, relatively relaxed win with some rotations, taking 2-0 lead quite early on as well. Were for Union side remarkable is that the last 9 games they haven't kept a clean sheet in comparison to Antwerp as well. Genk also have not the best record of that of late for sure either. For Serie A side, then yeah, Marius got his 10th goal of the season, and he had a really big chance at the end to actually equalize and actually cause an upset somehow, which maybe it was even possible because Union were not really pushing, but also again with juggling with Europe, of course. And 7 losses in a row for Serie A to close this season. Well, they have a chance to not may go out with 8 losses in a row. But we'll have to see how that pans out over the next weekend. And it's not very relevant anymore, is it?
Yeah, it remains incredibly tight at the top, on the cusp of the playoffs kind of starting now with one round of regular fixtures to go. I think it's all set up to be as exciting and as tight as the playoffs could be. And I, you know, regular listeners will know that I'm no real fan of the playoffs as a system, but I think, you know, if you want some excitement and you want to generate interest, then, you know, we're absolutely going to have lots of that over the next 6 or 7 games, because the playoffs look tighter than they've been for quite some time. So it's going to be really exciting to see how that goes. Just before we move on, Joris, to talking a wee bit about the Challenger Pro League, this action this weekend, and there was a big game there, of course, a very big game between Molenbeek and Beveren. We've got some other listeners' questions. Let's get to grips with those, shall we? Because there's one in particular just for you. A fellow Genki's been in touch with us, Yolan at Yolan23112000, and he wants to know, Joris, as a co-Genk fan, can you ask Joris who his favourite Genk player is?
I'll try not to make this a long answer, but okay, all time, and that has to do with when I started following football, that has to be Wesley Sonck, who had a wonderful season where he scored 30 goals around 20 years ago. Lately, I'm not necessarily a fan as an analyst, but okay, that's something separate. But from the current squad, there's a lot of players that I really like. The one that stands out in a way because is actually Rozovsky, which is then not a young player, I guess, of course. He's actually the most experienced head, I think, together with Sanada. But he's like often overlooked, I guess. And like especially this weekend, he had another really great game as well. He stepped it up with Han and not being there. Always written off, and without complaining, he goes back into the team and just like no coaching. Every coach so far has in the end, they made his best 11 with him in the squad, and the results have not always been going their way, Genk's way when he was not there. So I have to say him, I think. El Canous is it's an easy pick as well. So like definitely that. I just wanted to highlight one that I do like a lot, and that is a bit less in the spotlights generally speaking as well. But I think, yeah, generally I would say more technical and young players, so an El Canous will fit that bill for sure as well. And specifically here this season and recent years, maybe even given situations, I like players who fight back, even especially when they don't complain about it when they were past actually as well. They just and that's exactly what he did. So
there you go, Yolan. I hope that answers your question for you. Joris mentioning Wesley Sonck there just reminded me he was actually on commentary duties this weekend, which I thought was kind of quite interesting to see him back in the Belgian game, co-commentating on a game this weekend.
He does that, and also analyze, but in that form, I do not always like him as much for sure. But
yeah, we'd rather see him on the pitch.
Yeah, definitely. He's there.
We've got another listener question actually from Duke Lecky de Goodwin, who wants to ask us about Divock Origi. Joris, he's asking whether he should be in the Red Devil squad.
Well, he still should be within a shout, I suppose. But at the current rates, let's see, what would we have as strikers? Yeah, obviously the number one pick will be Lukaku, and then it's a long wait maybe, but I guess Openda in recent years and given his recent developments has proven that he could be there, and Batshuayi, you might not be for him or against him, maybe in place of Batshuayi if three strikers are even taken. Of course, I don't remember if Tedesco did take even three out and out strikers in this smaller squads. If you take a larger squad, maybe he could be as the third option. Although they always have the options to move with the likes of Trossard and the Keetlaren as well. He should be still on the fringes, I suppose. So I'll stick with a boring maybe, but not completely convinced.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to kind of give a definitive answer to that, because, you know, you would think that he probably has a chance in a way, and I say that based more on what he has to offer than necessarily his actual form. But it's very early days, obviously. Tedesco's only put one squad together, so that squad is going to evolve a little bit as well. So I think the door probably remains open, and what we do know is he's actually been very good, particularly after his first round of fixtures, which, as we know now, were beyond his wildest dreams, and I think all of our wildest dreams, great results. He has been very good at being in contact with players who didn't make his first squad, to chat to them recently, and I'm sure Divock has probably been one of these as well. I think he's learning the lessons of, you know, hopefully, you know, as Joris highlighted, you know, improving communication is going to be important going forward, particularly with those players who obviously aspire to be in the squad but maybe aren't at the moment. So he's certainly got plenty to offer as a player, there's no doubt about that. So we'll see if he can make it into a future squad. All right, Joris, let's talk Challenger Pro League playoffs, match day 7. We score roundup as we always do. We'll start with playoff 2, which is the relegation playoff. Lommel won convincingly 4-1 at home against Denza in a game which saw Lommel club legend and captain Glenn Nevin celebrate his 300th appearance for the Limburg side. There were some rather nice celebrations as part of that. A lot of his family were there. The club made a nice presentation to him, and by the looks of it, he had a lovely day and a big day for him and for Lommel. Elsewhere, SL16 played out a 0-0 draw against Jong Genk. Vertonghen lost 1-0 at home to Dender, which now means not only did they remain bottom, but they've now slipped 4 points from safety. So last week it looked like they were within touching distance of safety. That has slipped away from them a little bit with 3 games to go. So they're still in with a shout, but still remain bottom. Playoff 1, the promotion playoff, Beerschot won convincingly 4-0 at home against Club Next. Anderlecht Futures managed to salvage a relatively late draw against Liers. And in the big game of the weekend that I think we'd all been waiting for quite some time in Brussels at the Edmund Machtens, Molenbeek drew 1-1 with Beveren, which means that Molenbeek remain top. They're still a point clear of Beveren, so things are exactly the same as they were before this fixture was at the weekend. So with 3 games to go, it's still in Molenbeek's hands as Beveren try to hunt them down. I saw most of this game, actually, and I felt that it was quite a tense affair, Joris. Obviously, both sides really desperate not to lose this one for understandable reasons. Second half was much better than the first, was much more open. Molenbeek taking the lead through a free kick, floated ball into the box by Kylian Hazard. And I think it was Florian Lejeancourt who managed to get a little glancing header on to score the opener. And then Beveren managing to equalise pretty much straight away within a minute and a half or so, where an almost identical goal, actually. It was another free kick, ball floated into the box, and a slightly weird one, Alexander Vukotic getting his head in it, heading it down. And rather bizarrely, it just bounced and went straight through, and I think you and me probably agree this was quite a slightly dodgy goalkeeping error from Theo Defourny, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's not his best moment in his career, for sure. That's for him, you would hope that they don't lose out on the title based on a very narrow margin to Beveren, where this one save could have made a difference. Of course, again, everything that happens can influence anything that happens afterwards. So also Bever in the end, slightly surprisingly, I found, were relatively happy to keep it at a point. Of course, if they would have lost it, the whole affair would have been almost over, almost impossible to cover. And now it's only one slip up that needs to happen for them. Slightly, I didn't see that much of the game, but I've heard it was a slightly underwhelming affair, more bit cagey maybe. Like I saw some pictures of, especially from a Molenbeek player who had got a hit from a Mbokani, I think. His face didn't look really well after the game, so it was more of a such kind of a tense game indeed, as you described it, as far as I can could gather. But yeah, maybe slightly underwhelming in a way as well then. But everything is still open for in the title race. That's, of course, a good thing. And regarding your points, like going from the top to the bottom quickly as well, Virtua indeed are still behind, but yeah, they have to play both the Jong Genk and Standard in the last two games still as well, so they are not safe. And if Virtua can get the results against the right teams, they are still there. And of course, yeah, there's still no complete final verdicts on that case between Jong Genk and Standard, where Virtua are probably eagerly looking to see the confirmation of the initial decision as well, which could narrow the gap to both teams with one. There is still hope for them, I guess. Since the fixture list is still in this sense, I guess, in their favor, it could also not make any difference, of course. But because of this, they are definitely still within a shout, and it's not completely lost yet.
Yeah, even with three games to go, I have a feeling that there is still some room both at the top and at the bottom, potentially, for some twists and turns. And I suppose the main question from a Challenger Pro League point of view now is can Molenbeek hold their nerve? Obviously, they have their destiny in their own hands now, and they just need to go and win those remaining three games. I think on paper, and you know, lots of people will be screaming at me listening to this going, yes, but the game's not played in paper. As you know, as I was saying recently, I think on paper for me, Beveren have the marginally easier run-in of the three fixtures. That's what I would say. And that's where I think from a Beveren fans perspective, there is still some hope. And as you were saying, you know, they're hoping that Molenbeek might slip up somewhere. But it does very much look like it's going to go to the final game and potentially, you know, the final kick of the final game. So keep an eye on that, as will we, and we'll be covering that right to the wire. So just before we go, we can't do that without touching on some great results for the Belgian sides in Europe this week, Joris, ahead of the second legs, the second games. Ghent drew one each with West Ham at the Galatasaray in a game that they probably should have won. I was talking to the guys from the We Are West Ham podcast earlier today, ahead of the second leg, dissecting the first game a little bit, and they very much agreed with me that Ghent were the better side in the first game and unlucky probably not to win it, certainly some of the chances they created. Anderlecht, of course, having a fantastic result at home in Brussels, beating AZ 2-0 ahead of the second leg, and Union getting a 1-1 draw in Leverkusen. We should also probably mention, actually, the Union fans, or at least some of them, had a pretty rough time. They were on the wrong end of some pretty dodgy treatment, both in terms of trying to get into the ground ahead of that and afterwards, from what I can gather as well. Leverkusen not entirely covering themselves in glory from an away fans' perspective there. We don't like to see things like that happening. But yeah, they come away from Germany with a 1-1 draw. And it looks like, I hesitate to ask this question without jinxing it, Joris, but, you know, What prospect of three Belgian sides reaching European semi-finals?
Definitely. I would say, if I'm optimistic, two teams will actually go through. And okay, I'll stick with that. I'll stay optimistic for this week. So if I have to give a prediction here.
It's good to be bold. It's good to be bold. It is. Much like you, I'm getting quite excited about kind of what might happen here this week as well, because I don't think any of us saw any of this coming much earlier in the season. So we're very much enjoying what's coming our way at the moment. I think that's just about all we've got time for this week. Thanks for joining me, Joris.
A pleasure as always. And let's hope Ben gathers a lot of valuable information for his book and to share with us as well, maybe at a certain point in time, maybe with all of your listeners as well.
That's right, yeah. Kind of, I look forward to asking him about that because he's been sending me and Joris some cryptic pictures of archive folders that he's been opening as he takes notes for his upcoming first book. So we'll maybe hear a little bit more about that next week. I think you know by now, probably, don't you, everybody, how to get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us here at the BFP by reaching out to us on social media, and please do keep your listeners' questions coming as well. We absolutely love hearing from listeners, and we always try to answer all of your questions as well. We'll always continue to do that, so keep getting in touch with us. If you would like to, we'd love it if you'd leave a little review on your podcast platform of choice as well. That helps new listeners find the BFP and, you know, find out more about the wonderful world of Belgian football, which for those of you who are already on board will be lapping up no end. So until next week and the next episode of the BFP, have a great week, everybody, and we'll speak to you soon.